Democrats in the U.S. Senate are optimistic that they can reach a bipartisan consensus on universal background checks for gun purchases following mass shootings in Boulder and Atlanta. But is that the right solution? University of Arizona sociologist Jennifer Carlson has studied this topic for over a decade. She co-wrote a recent editorial in the New York Times arguing that U.S. policymakers should be looking at other ways to prevent gun violence, focusing instead on the trauma that ripples out from a shooting. Jennifer Carlson joins us now. And Professor, you write that gun trauma goes far beyond the 40,000 lives taken each year by gun violence and the 115,000 people injured by guns. What kind of toll has it taken on all of us?
I mean, it's everything from obviously the lives that have been taken, the families, communities that have been impacted. You know, we can see it in terms of how it's impacted, you know, everyday decisions like where we choose to live, if we're privileged to have that choice, when we go out, where we go out, you know, how late at night we stay out. It has shaped how parents talk to their children. It's really sort of impacted our psyches in a way that, again, goes above and beyond sort of the people that are most directly impacted by gun violence.
You said an important word there, I think, privilege. We know that gun violence itself affects certain groups of people disproportionately. I assume that means the same thing is true for the trauma that ripples out from it.
Yeah, and this is something that I think is really important as we talk about gun violence as an epidemic, because that's a very powerful framing, because it suggests that this is something that is major. It's not just individual level, it's society level. But epidemic often has this connotation that it affects society evenly, that everybody's equally at risk. And that's not the case with gun violence. Even in the case of school shootings, which are often framed as types of gun violence associated with white middle-class schools, African-American students are actually much more likely to be exposed to a school shooting, to gun violence in the school. So it's definitely the case that communities of color, under-resourced communities, underserved communities are much more likely to bear the burden of not just gun violence, but gun trauma.
You write about a cycle of gun violence and trauma. Trauma leads to fear, which leads to anger, and that can then create more violence. Can you talk about that cycle more?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I think psychologists and sociologists have looked at, how violence, the experience of violence within a community, concentrated within a community, affects sort of capacities, whether that's at the sort of individual psychological level or even community capacity. One of the cyclical elements is most certainly more gun violence, but it's also, you know, in terms of things beyond gun violence, like political engagement and the capacity to organize as a community, for example. That's Robert Vargas's work on Chicago. So, and then that in turn creates the context for gun trauma to take even deeper root. And so when we're thinking about gun policy, we have to think about that element if we want to sort of really get at the roots of what's going on with gun violence in America.
This is become a wildly partisan issue. And for that reason, there hasn't been any meaningful change in 25 years or more, because people tend to just retreat into their corners whenever they have a conversation about this.
Well, I think that the part of the way that you get past the politics is actually seeing the solutions that are already being forged that are out there but aren't seen as quote unquote part of the gun debate or part of doing gun politics. There's community embedded organizations. So the Violence Interrupters, Youth Alive, these are groups that are actually doing the work of putting trauma at the center of what I would argue gun policy on the ground, you know, working with people who have survived gun violence in the immediate aftermath to offer them resources on how to heal and not just fall back into this trauma violence cycle. And so that kind of work, you know, we debate universal background checks and red flag laws, and these are all things that we should be debating, but we also need to bring this kind of gun violence work to the fore, because it's what will do the deeper healing work that we need to do in order to address gun violence, not just in terms of the statistics, but in terms of the very deep psychological toll it's taken on American society.
So what do you say to a gun owner who doesn't buy your trauma argument, who says that it is, you know, his or her right to own a gun, and in fact, those guns make them safer? Would you tell that person that they have been a victim of gun trauma?
You know, one thing that I think is really crucial to remember is that the number one reason why people own guns in this country is for self-defense. And we can debate on what that really means, what is actually at the root of that fear. But at some level, fear is operating, right? And I think that, you know, I've talked to dozens of gun owners, gun carriers, gun instructors, and fear is, you know, if we're honest, fear is operating on both sides of the debate. And so I really think of gun trauma as a way to sort of elevate the debate to acknowledging that fear and recognizing that we actually share that fear. So that's what I would say to someone who's like, why are we talking about trauma? I think it's a way to elevate the debate.
Jennifer Carlson is a sociologist at the University of Arizona. We're going to link you to her editorial for the New York Times at hereandnow.org. Jennifer, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.